When we do something new, there's a great deal of apprehension, isn't there? Cheryl and I, you ought to see us when we were on our way to South Africa. Many apprehensions we had, especially with all the stories that we'd heard. It seemed like we'd heard every bad story in the world, about South Africa and going to Zambia. When we first come to South Africa, Mr. Van Belkom wanted to teach us and kind of, show us the ropes in Africa. So he was going to Zambia. That's a country north of South Africa, about 100 miles, 200 or so miles north of the South African border. That's where we crossed the Zambezi River. And, we just bought a car, Toyota. We have a little Toyota Camry down there, and it runs fine. It has an automatic, which is unusual, by the way, for them. But with me, I thought it was better, especially for Cheryl. Not for me, I've been fine. But anyway, for my wife. So anyway, we were trying to get this car all set up to go to Zambia, and I started calling it, because when you take your car out of the country, you have to get special insurance. And the first sign of trouble was this. Nobody wanted to insure our car in Zambia. And, finally, Mr. Van Belkom's son, who ran insurance thing, arranged for us to get insurance policy. So if we lost the car, it would be okay. And I'll never forget going to Zambia, taking Mr. Kambani Banda, who was an elder, by the way, up in Zambia, in Lusaka. And we came back one night, and we were staying in a motel there, and we were going to go back to our motel, and we let him off at the gate. And I said, well, Kambani, I'm going to wait at the gate and make sure you get in safe. And he says, no, you get out of here. You've got the car. So I realized right then how dangerous, it can be and how we have to be careful, especially in Zambia, by the way. It's even different, especially in that area. So finally, we did get the insurance, but it was something that was a little scary. When we walk along a trail and we're close to the edge, it gets scary. The youth at camp, you ought to see them when they're abseiling or rappelling. And they look down that cliff, straight down. Wow. But when they finish, I'm sure Mr. Mickelson knows this too. When they finish, they've got this exhilarating feeling of overcoming something. It's really sad when we had some youth that didn't make it. And if we had enough time, perhaps we could get them to go down. But, it's very sad when somebody doesn't make it down the cliff and go through it. We've never had any problem, I don't think, either here in America or in South Africa with some of these ventures when you're safe. And frankly, interestingly enough, the most dangerous thing we had in South Africa was the water. And we had some people go out on the sea and didn't have their life jackets. And we almost had a drowning. It's interesting. What you don't think of as that dangerous, it doesn't look that dangerous to people, it turns out to be more dangerous. And we had a couple incidents there. And it was very close. So the next year, we talked to the staff. Now, it's not United Church of God staff. We actually go to a place there, and they have their own staff, unlike what we do here. They have their own staff that takes care of us. Fear is something that is built into us for our own safety. Animals in the wild that are not cautious tend to be captured by the lions, frankly. Bontebok had this problem. There are the antelope type of deer in South Africa, type of animal. And when they get curious and they're not careful, they can lose their life. Skiing. I know you're going to go skiing. We're going to go skiing in Salt Lake if we get the chance. We will, even next week. It's a wonderful sport. I don't know if you've ever noticed that when you ski, when you freeze up, what happens? When you get up there and you look down, you get scared. You start to stiffen up. That's about the time you fall down. And I'll never forget my first year of skiing. I went down a black diamond slope, like an idiot, Decided to go down the black diamond slope, and you're going down this thing as fast as, like seems like 100 miles an hour, And you're thinking, thy kingdom come, and what an idiot I am. Why did I ever do this? Who talked me into this? I remember an accident happened out here on Washington 27, State Highway 27, right out here in Pines in Spokane. truck was passing, or somebody was passing a truck in an oil incident, but a woman who came down the side and saw this guy coming towards her froze. Instead of just pulling over to the right, even in a ditch or something, she froze. And consequently, a man lost his life. Now, of course, she wasn't the one passing. There was somebody else passing. He shouldn't have been. But if you can keep your wits about you, if you can overcome your fear, you can do a lot of things. And that's the subject of today's sermon. Do not be afraid. Overcoming fear. You know, Satan the devil, brethren, works by fear, doesn't he? Even inside the church when there's problems in 95, in 94. They worked by fear, didn't they? They fired some of us because they thought the others would be afraid. You know, the devil uses fear. Look at the Bible. How many times is fear used? Look in the book of Esther and how Esther had to overcome her fear to come before Ahasuerus. I think it's Xerxes, they think, in history. And the Persian kings, brethren, were not nice guys. They were some of the most brutal kings on earth. Christ gave his final instructions to his apostles before he died. He spoke about fear and how we must be able to overcome it. Let's go to John 14 and verse 1. You know, whether you're in Africa, United States, or anywhere, fear is how the devil works so many times. And people who give in to their fears give in to the devil. John 14 and verse 1. Let not your heart be troubled. You believe in God, believe also in me. The word for troubled there is a Greek word, tereso. It means to agitate, trouble, to cause one inward commotion, to take away his calmness of mind, to trouble, to render anxious, to strike one's spirit with fear and dread. You know, fear is a terrible thing. It can paralyze people. Some people become so afraid they won't even leave their houses. Some people get afraid to go in an elevator. Fear is meant to help us to a certain extent. I mean, it's ridiculous not to fear certain things. Like I said, walking along a narrow ledge. In South Africa, at the camp last year, we went abseiling. Everything was fine. We had no problems in United Camp. But with our camp, it was kind of a commercial camp in a sense. They had another group. They had an elite climbing group from South Africa that came at the same time that we were there. And there was, you know, one of the finest climbers in South Africa. Very young people, all of them. And they really knew what they were doing. And they were walking along the garden route, which is a beautiful route in South Africa right next to the sea. And one of the young girls, I don't know if we know why today, made a misstep. She fell to her death. They couldn't even get her. I don't know if they ever did get her. They tried helicopters. They tried everything. You know, so these fears that we have are there for a good reason. They're there to keep us, you know, so we're alert when we have a problem. But they can also, you know, go the opposite way. John 14 and verse 27. John 14 and verse 27. Peace I live with you. My peace I give to you. Not as the world gives do I give to you. Let not your heart be troubled. Neither let it be afraid. You know, when you go and you do something boldly, when you think, I can do it, I can make it with the power of the living God, you do. When you get afraid, when you become timid, and that's the way the devil works so many times, with so many people who are afraid, perhaps, to go up and say, you know, I need to keep the Sabbath. Who are afraid, maybe, to go up and, you know, start tithing on faith that God's going to bless them. You know, fear is something that the devil uses over and over again. In 1994 and 5, we all know what happened in the church. Well, there's a man in Malawi named Mr. Gladstone Chandi. He makes probably what the average Malawian makes. He started a very small clinic in Lilongwe. It's a medical clinic, and he's not a medical doctor, by the way. As usual, the standards are different in Africa than America. But he does run a little medical clinic. Nobody else in Malawi was upset by the changes. Nobody. He was the only one, he and a few of his family. He had another son, I think, Edwin, that went with him also, and his wife, of course. But he heard that Mr. Victor Kubik was coming to Zimbabwe. At that time, Zimbabwe wasn't in as much difficulty as it is now. But he heard that Mr. Victor Kubik was going to go to Zimbabwe. And you know, he overcame his fear. He was ostracized by his own church, literally. He was the only one. It wasn't like, you know, Spokane or even Salt Lake and other areas where we had other people come with us. He was literally by himself. So he decided that he would go to Zimbabwe to the feast, not knowing what was going to happen. Very poor man, relatively. And there he met Victor Kubik. And Victor Kubik told him, he says, you know, I have a special project that I'm working on for people overseas, like he's done in Chernobyl and other places, with Life Nets. And that was the beginning for him. Now, Life Nets has helped build a clinic for them. Recently, the Rotary Club, not any donations from any person in the Church of God that I know of, gave $20,000 or so, and they bought an ambulance for them. Because in order to have a birthing clinic, they have to have an ambulance, for obvious reasons. The government requires. And so now he's going to have a birthing clinic. He's already got the nurse ready to go. All they're waiting for is a government approval, which, by the way, who knows how long it will take. You know, as you know, it's a government, it's in Africa. So we hope that he gets that approval quickly. But here's a man who stood up on his own. By himself. In fact, I remember when I was working and I called Mr. Kubik, ironically, he had a little thing, said, can anybody help us in Malawi? And I emailed him, says, Vic, can I help you? And so I used to send medications over to Malawi from Salt Lake City. And now they're sending them directly from Holland, by the way. So they don't have anybody to do. They just found out that's what they did it. And sure enough, I got to meet Mr. Chandi. And there he was. Now, brethren, we have two churches in Malawi. He happened to meet somebody at a funeral who knew the truth, believed the truth like we do, and he told us, when are you going to get on the ball? You know? I don't think he'd mind me mentioning, he's one of the men in Blantyre, Mr. Salawila. And sure enough, Mr. Salawila came. Now we have a church of around 50 in Blantyre and around 50 in Lilongwe. Because one man stood up alone, literally alone. And I just want to tell you something. I have the greatest and highest regard for him because of what he did. Another man, Malawi Mwani James, it's very difficult to pronounce her names, by the way, because our English tongues just do not have these words. It's terrible. You know, it's embarrassing because, you know, you get up, you say their name, they'll laugh. You know you've goofed it up again. You know what I mean? Because our English tongues just don't have these names. My wife is better at it than I am. She knows a little Afrikaans. You know, and first, I thought they were speaking to me in gibberish English. Kuyamora, they'd say. That means good morning. It took me 6 months to figure out in South Africa, you know, oh, they're speaking in Afrikaans. That's what's going on. They're not drunk after all. You know what I mean? It took me a long time to figure some of those things out. It's even worse with Chichewa in Malawi. But I'll never forget meeting this man. Dr. Chilapora has another clinic that Life Nets has sponsored, and he lives down in his area, Malacca, in Malawi. Malawi, Mr. James, Mawai James, was a Seventh-day Adventist who had came to Worldwide Church of God before the changes. And this kind of shows you something of how these changes affected people, even from Malawi. And they're affected just like here. So many similarities. He went to church after the changes came. And he said he came out so discouraged. He was so down. He just quit. He just stopped. Somehow he got in touch with Dr. Chilapura, a member of the church in Balaka, and we baptized him, I think just about 6 months ago or so. Here's a man who overcame his fear. And that, to me, shows some of the fruits of what some people did. You know, when they made the changes, people forgot something. You know, our brains, brethren, have all these connections. At least most of us do. Some of you wonder, you know. all these connections. All these synapses and this, that, and millions and billions of connections. They're all interconnected. And you teach people for 20, 30, 40 years that they keep the Sabbath, and that's part of your religion, and that's part of God. And then somebody comes out and says, oh, by the way, it's all done away with. All that time you spent is for naught. You know, you might as well flush it, you know, whatever. Forget it. Then what happens to people? Like Mr. James. They can't disassociate the keeping of the Sabbath with God. Some do, yes. That's one of the saddest things I've seen, brethren, all over the world, seen in the United States. Look at your size here. What was Spokane 15 years ago? 700, 600, 500? Hundreds more, right? Hundreds more, same as Salt Lake. One time in Salt Lake, we have a church around 40 in Salt Lake now. One time at a high in Salt Lake City in the early 90s, late 80s, 400 attended. You know? Are they going to this church or that church of God? No. They're just like Malawi. They're going nowhere. Or they might show up in a, you know, Pentecostal church or a Methodist church or something once in a while. You know, you can't take people and disassociate them from their relationship with God. And that's, I think, one of the crimes of the century. And it's one of the worst abuses you could ever have. To take somebody's faith. Herbert Armstrong taught that, brethren. One of the worst abuses is to take their faith and ruin it. And, you know, that's, and also use fear. The fear that the difficulties, there are difficulties in keeping the Sabbath. There are difficulties in obeying God. But the rewards, brethren, are great. Psalm 27 and verse 1. You know, we have to overcome the fear. Notice what David said. The Lord is my light and my salvation. Whom shall I fear? The Lord is my strength of life. You know, Cheryl and I have seen so many miracles. Miracles that we never believed. In 1995, I was an unemployed minister. In fact, Mr. Kubik said at the Indianapolis conference that we were the biggest group of unemployed ministers in the world. I never thought I'd even be a minister again. I went out and got a job. That was it. I didn't have any idea. But you know, God has something in mind for us, brethren. It was amazing to me. Within a year, I was not only the minister of one church, I was the minister of three or something like that. With a year and a half. At one time, I had five churches. Baker City, Boise, Salt Lake City, Grand Junction, and Twin Falls. By the way, one in Idaho, too. You know, God can do miracles, even if we don't know. We've seen that in Malawi. One man stood up for the truth. One man! And literally, brethren, changed the country. So you can, when you learn to trust in God. Psalm 91. You know, fear is something that Satan uses over and over again. He uses fear, the fear of death, the fear of this, the fear of that. There's only one hope. You know, I've taught a lot about evolution and creation and evolution question. I'd hate to be a scientist, a physicist, astronomer, which most of them are, about 90%, look at the stats, or atheists and agnostics. How would you like to be that? This is what they teach. The universe, this is your destiny. The sun is going to get hotter and hotter. Do you know that? Billion years, it gets hotter and hotter. Nuclear fusion stops. The gravity starts to compress the sun. And then, boom, it gets hotter. And finally, some of the suns become black holes, where the gravity is so great that light can't, leave. Literally. Anything that gets there gets sucked in, just like a whirlpool. And eventually, the universe burns out like a candle. And then the evolutionist, the agnostic, the atheist, the physicist, by the way, I'm sorry to say, most of the geologists of the world, whatever, they'll tell you this. Just be thankful you had a little life to live. Wow. No wonder young kids go out and put guns to their heads when they're taught that in school. No purpose for life. Can you think of anything more discouraging? But the pain that most people go through to die, the pain that you women go through to have a baby, the pain that we go through just with life itself, has no purpose and no meaning. I can't think of anything that would make me more afraid. That's where the truth comes in, brethren, because it gives hope. You know, John 1, Christ talked about it, didn't he? And John talks about it. Christ was the light. And the light has not comprehended the darkness. Even the darkness of Africa, brethren, it has not overwhelmed the light of the truth that there's a God, that He has a purpose for you and me. You know, it's so sad, these gambling institutions. I've been there. Went down to Worley, Idaho, we go to. You know, right down there by Worley. I can't imagine somebody sitting there all day pulling this lever. You know, I guess they push a button now, don't they? Less effort, right? To see if all the little apples and oranges or whatever come up, you know? That's what some people live for. Sad, isn't it? Not that you are a divine creation of God that was put on the earth for a purpose. You know, the Feast of Tabernacles theme, what a wonderful theme for all here. Psalm 91. He who dwells in the secret place of the Most High shall abide under the shadow of the Almighty. I will say of God, He is my refuge, my fortress, my God in whom I trust. Surely He shall deliver you. You know, Cheryl and I have seen God deliver us. One time in Malawi, we went to a place called the Chichirwa Lodge. It was a nice little place. It wasn't very fancy. I tell Cheryl it's like camping to go to Malawi. You know what I mean? You know, that's the way I look at it. Her idea of camping is the Taj Mahal or something like that, you know. Waldorf Astoria in New York City or something. Anyway, we were up there, and most of the time we stayed in the main building. But this one time, they were full. And they had this other little building, kind of a place with three or four units, you know, that they rented out. So we went down there, and for the first two nights, we were there by ourselves. Great. And we had a little place we could meet the members who come to see us a lot. And then on Friday night, I'll never forget this, the lady, the owner of the lodge, says, hey, we got some other people come in. Would you mind going down and having them come in? I said, no, no problem. Well, this is where timing comes in. President Bush was on TV, you know, threatening to attack Iraq, right? And guess who our friends were that were coming in? Muslims. And boy, I tell you, you never heard somebody pray like that. You know? You've never. And my wife, now, you can ask Cheryl about this. I didn't hear it. She did. Okay. The guy who took us in said, oh, we got this American minister here. He's got wads of money. Now, the reason I have wads of money is a kwacha, it's 100 kwacha, well, it's 110 now. Around 90 to 110 kwacha per dollar. There's only 500 kwacha. It's the biggest bill you can get in Malawi. And they don't take credit cards. Sorry. American Express, you know. So in order to pay just for a few days, you've got to have a wad of money like this. I mean, you have to go up there with American dollars or South African rand and switch them, and you literally get piles of money like this. And also, you really need to pay them in their local currency, because you can pay them in dollars, but they'll charge you like double. So you pay them in our local currency. You learn those things. So this guy comes in and says, oh, we got this American pastor. He's got all these, you know, wads of money. And he's in that room back there. And then Cheryl, she hears him say, well, we could have jihad here. No, I'm sleeping. And she wakes me up and says, they're going to kill us. And I said, Cheryl, that's kind of drastic, isn't it? You know, what do you mean they're going to kill us? I mean, we haven't done anything. You know, we didn't say we're a president for President Bush or anything. And literally, at that time, he was on TV, you know, because you get satellite TV up there, by the way. And so all night, we had this terror, not knowing. See, we were stuck in the back, and in Malawi, like most foreign countries, many third world countries, they have bars in the windows. So we're not going to crawl out the window. And I don't have a crowbar or a screwdriver or anything with me. You know, nothing like that. So from about 10 o'clock to 6 o'clock in the morning, you know, there's two apprehensive people. My poor little wife, she gets more cuddly than she's ever been in a long time, you know. She comes over, you know. Anyway, it was one tough night. And about 4 o'clock in the morning, 5 o'clock in the morning, he got up to pray. And you haven't heard a prayer until you hear them pray. You know, they don't go in the quiet place and pray to God. They let the whole world know it. So it was really something. And then, about 6 o'clock, the light started to come up and says, well, we're still alive. You know, whatever. So I said, Cheryl, they know we're here. Let's just take our showers and get ready. And then we'll just take everything we can out. We'll walk out the door and walk up to the main lodge. So we're okay. And it turned out we were. We were fine. You know, God protected us. Whatever. I think they were bluffing. I think they knew we were there and knew we could hear them, and this was a way. By the way, guess where they were from? Johannesburg. They were visiting in Malawi. You know, God's been with us. And Satan works with fear. Exodus 14. You know, when people start to lose faith in God, they use fear, don't they? The fear of this, the fear of that. It's the way that Satan does. The way, unfortunately, our minds work if we're not careful. And we all know this story. When Israel came out of Egypt, what did they do? Did they have faith in God? Did their faith come? They'd seen these miracles. They'd seen Pharaoh's firstborn die. They've seen all these things happen. And yet, what happens when they come to the first trial? Huh? They see the Egyptian armies coming, and they look at Moses in verse 11, Exodus 14, and sarcastically say, Moses, because there were no graves in Egypt, have you taken us to die in the wilderness? Why have we do so dealt with us to bring us out of Egypt? Is this not the word that we told you in Egypt? Let us alone? What did their human nature say? What did a lot of people in the church do, brother? Let's go back to Egypt. Literally, you know, ISIS and all these things, Easter, where do they come from? Egyptian and Babylonian gods? That Christianity picked up and calls it Christian and said it doesn't make any difference? I'll tell you what, you can paint a lion yellow and he's still a lion. You know? You can paint him black, purple, or whatever, it's still going to be a lion, isn't it? Sad. But notice the fear. Oh, it's too hard. That's what they say. Oh, it's too hard to go to the Feast of Tabernacles. Oh, your kids might miss a few days of school. Oh, well, what if they learn about God and why they're alive? What's more important? Sad, isn't it? Overcoming fear by faith, Proverbs 3. Look at all the scriptures that God has, brethren, for us to be encouraged by. Over and over again, you see that God encourages us. And that's why it's so important to come to church. And I'm glad to hear about you people on the cybercast and the people getting the phone hookups. What's the first thing that people do when they're trying to not give you, have you keep the truth? They didn't want you to gather, did they? what they said in the 90s. Don't talk to one another. Yeah. That's what Satan does. Very interesting. When Cheryl and I, we had a psychological counseling, because Cheryl worked at university, it was free, so I thought, well, we'll go in and see what, you know, what they're going to say. You know, we're going through a lot of stress. You know the first thing he said? Are you talking to your friends? And then he gave me another shocker. I don't know whether it was prophetic or what. He says, I didn't think I'd ever be a minister again. I was working for this little place called Power Extraction. I was office manager. And that was my life. He said, by the way, you know there's some people going to come to you and want to start a church, don't you? Wow. And that literally happened. So it's interesting how some of these things work. You know, in time, how you receive and from the strangest places, you know, these profound statements. Proverbs 3. And it's very important. Verse 21. Notice, my son, let them not depart from your eyes. Keep sound wisdom and discretion, so they will be life to your soul. Then you will walk safely in your way, and your foot will not stumble when you are down, and you will not be afraid. You know, we must overcome our fears. We're all afraid of something. But when fear paralyzes you, you're in trouble, aren't you? Just like that lady on Highway 27 out here. But paralyzed. Somebody died. Because all she had to do was pull to the right, pull in the ditch. But she stopped. Sad. And that's what happens. That's the way, unfortunately, it is. It's very, very important that we look to God for the faith that we need to have. It's an interesting story. There's a book I have called Stories from the Heart. It has a story of a young man who was up in a building, and the building caught fire. And the only place that he could go was out on a ledge. And he's standing on this ledge. And the firemen are down there, and they've got this nice big net for him to jump into. But he can't jump. He's frozen. He's absolutely just stark, raving fear. He's frozen. Finally, his father comes. And his father says to him, son, haven't you always trusted me? I'm telling you now, you must jump to save your life. And a father's voice saved his son. And he jumped. You know, God's like that to us, brethren. There are times that we must jump. There are times that we must trust in God like we've never trusted Him before. One of the greatest examples in the Bible, I think, is 2 Kings 18 and Hezekiah. You're all acquainted with it. But notice how the evil people were. I won't read the whole section here for the sake of time. But you see the Assyrians come up, and they're going to attack, and they've already taken northern tribes. They're gone. And Hezekiah is sitting down there all alone. Cheryl and I visited, by the way, that stone where it says that Hezekiah is like a caged lion or whatever. Sennacherib cylinder in the British Museum. Quite a place to go, by the way. That happened. We know from history. It's one of the few events of the Bible you can see an outside source, two or three of them, showing that it actually happened, like the Bible says. And what did the guy do when he comes up? Rabshakeh. What did they do? What does he do with Hezekiah? He says, don't trust in God. And then he says, have not the Assyrians killed and got all these people and conquered all these nations? Have not the Assyrians conquered the gods of so-and-so and so-and-so and so-and-so? It's the way the devil works, doesn't he? You know, brethren, we serve the living God. You all know the end of the story. If you look in, 2 Kings 19 and verse 35, the end of the story is this. And it came to pass on a certain night that the angel of the Lord went and killed in the camp of the Assyrians 185,000. And when the people arose early in the morning, there were the corpses, all dead. So Sennacherib, king of Assyria, departed and went away, returned home, and remained in Nineveh. And later on, his own sons kill him. But when Sennacherib sent his messenger, what did he say? What did he try to do with Hezekiah? What does any army try to do when the Zulus attack the British, the Desalda? What do? They jet up there and they, you know, make all the noise they could. Because when they conquered an enemy, first thing you had to do was to make them afraid. But brethren, we have something that overcomes fear. Faith. And the God that created and made the universe. When you come to your trials, which you all have, when you come to your difficulties, when the devil tries to make you afraid, always look up and go to your room and pray. For God is able to deliver you from whatever it is. Whether it be a difficult situation on your job, difficult situation in your family, or even death. God's going to deliver us. That's the only real hope. And it is a real hope. A hope that will come to pass when all the enemies of our Creator will be destroyed. And the righteous, as it says in the book of Daniel, because they overcome. They weren't afraid. And they used the boldness and the courage that comes from the Spirit of God. The righteous, as Daniel says, will shine like the sun.